I have a bit of a cold, so hopefully you'll be able to understand me. I'm going to talk about cotton diseases, verticillium wilt, and bacterial blight for about 20 minutes, and then I'm going to turn the mic over to Dr. Monclova Santana, who's over there. She's your new extension plant pathologist. She replaced Jason Woodward this past year, so she's going to talk about corn diseases and about some cotton diseases as well. All right. Is there a trick? See if that's still working. All right. That's all right. I'll just go ahead and do it this way. That's fine. All right. So we'll start with bacterial blight. And I just do this as a reminder. We didn't see any bacterial blight last year or the year before, really, or very little in the last couple years. But we do periodically have problems with bacterial blight. It starts as these brown spots. They're fairly small initially. If you turn the leaf over, you always see them on the underside. So just because you see spotting on the top, that does not mean you have bacterial blight. It always is going to be on the bottom side as well. That's one of the ways to diagnose it. And you'll also get this water-soaking pattern. You see the bacteria running down the veins here. So water-soaking is associated with bacteria. One of the things that happens with bacterial blight is the leaves defoliate, starting from the bottom of the plant and going up. The bacteria will survive in that leaf debris and survive through to the next growing season. The other problem that we get is boll rots. And so this is where the yield losses are often the most extreme, is when you get the bacteria in your bolls. In some cases, the lint will be all black or the boll will just fall off. But the bigger part of this is if that happens to be a seed field, that seed will transmit the bacteria to wherever that seed is planted. So acid delining will knock out some of the bacteria, but it won't take it all out. So where I've seen new fields getting problems where they haven't had them before, a lot of time it is a seed introduction problem. I'm sorry about my voice. This is the best I can do. Every year I screen germplasm for bacterial blight. We plant them out in the field, we spray them with the bacteria, and then I rate them. And this is just some ratings from last year. I know you can't read this, that's fine. But you see incidence of bacterial blight on this y-axis, and you can see we're at 100% incidence in some of the more susceptible varieties. And just to give you a feel for where the companies are going, these are all pretty much new varieties, or let's say varieties that are just a couple years old. So Americot gave us 11 lines to test this past year. 7 of those were resistant, and 4 were susceptible. Delta Pine gave us 14 lines, 11 were resistant, and 3 were susceptible. The BASF gave us 10 lines, 7 were resistant, 3 were susceptible. Phytogen gave us 14 lines, they were all resistant. So you can pretty well assume your new phytogen varieties are going to be resistant. Cropland gave us 6 lines, 3 of them were resistant, 3 were susceptible. And so that just gives you an idea of the effort various companies are making to try to give you varieties that are resistant to the disease so that you won't ever have a problem. But if you have a history of having problems, or if you develop a problem, you certainly that next year want to make sure that you check whether your varieties are blight resistant or not. Because the resistance is almost absolute. And so you should not have a problem if you get a blight resistant variety. This is just I've been monitoring in the state of Texas, Mississippi, and Georgia, the acres, the cotton planted acres to blight susceptible varieties. And so back in 2005, all 3 states, the farmers were planting mostly blight resistant varieties, and bacterial blight just was not a problem. You just didn't get any calls on it. And then we lost Bolgard 1 varieties. Some of the Bolgard 2 ones that replaced them were susceptible to bacterial blight. So you saw more and more acres being planted to blight-susceptible varieties. And starting in 2011, we started seeing epidemics in the Mid-South, and it got to be a big deal in Arkansas and Mississippi and Alabama and whatnot. It just got bigger each year, and by 2015, we were starting to see problems in Texas. And then since about 2016 or 17, you've seen the growers going back to planting blight-resistant varieties. And what do you know, 2018, 2019, we haven't had blight problems. It's all tied to the acres that are being planted to blight-resistant varieties. If people are planting blight-resistant varieties, you will not have a problem. It's just that simple. I have, Cecilia had some handouts earlier, I think, okay, they're on the table where you registered. So we've got handouts on bacterial blight responses to varieties, verticillium wilt, and nematodes. And also that website, if you go to it, you'll see, you can find all those handouts on that website also. All right, let's get to verticillium wilt, which is a disease I spend most of my time with. So verticillium wilt, you get yellow leaves forming. It starts at the bottom of the plant, and usually by the last week of August, early September, you're seeing a lot of symptom development. You may be seeing defoliation. This past year, not so much. It wasn't an issue particularly. But these counties out here get a lot of verticillium wilt. Management-wise, these are the things that we talk about. First of all, your variety. Are you planting a variety that's fairly tolerant or really susceptible? Seeding rates. Generally, in a bad verticillium field, I like to see people planting at least 4 seed per foot of row. And if you can afford to go up higher than that, that will improve your situation. So seeding rate higher is better. Crop rotation. And I'm going to show a little bit of data on this later on. Crop rotation out of cotton works if you're new to verticillium wilt. If a field develops a problem and you're in the first 4 or 5 years of that problem, crop rotation will slow down the buildup of that fungus in the soil, and you will have higher yields if you're rotating out of cotton some. However, once the fungus is distributed all through your field, once it's built up a bit, crop rotation doesn't really help. Unless you're going to go 3, 4, 5 years out of cotton, crop rotation isn't going to help you. Irrigation rate, and I'm going to show some data on this later. Less is better, up to a point. Irrigation will really flare verticillium wilt. Tillage system. So I'm going to show some data on this as well. If you look at having beds and cultivation versus flat ground and minimal tillage, you will flare more verticillium in your bed system where you're cultivating. And I'll show what kind of differences it makes in a little bit. So this is from data from the Helms Research Farm, A&M Research Farm in Halfway. And it's got a moderate level of verticillium. It's not super hot, but it's moderate. And I've been monitoring it in the higher irrigation rate over the last 11 years. And you can see 2019 didn't have much verticillium wilt. Had quite a bit the year before that. But you can see it fluctuates, and the fluctuation has everything to do with the temperature, how hot it is in August, particularly late August. This is one of my variety trials that I conduct small plot variety trials every year. And I will say, because we had so little verticillium wilt this year, yields do not matter. So what the bars are the yields. But in fact, you can't tell anything this past year, because of the yields. There just wasn't a lot of vert. And when it came in, it was very late. But I do have some decent information to share on maybe some of the new varieties that look to be susceptible to verticillium. So that black line you see going up and down, that's defoliation. That's how some of these varieties performed in terms of defoliation. So a couple to draw your attention to is this green bar here. Green is Delta Pine. That's Delta Pine 1612 B2XF. I actually use that as a verticillium susceptible check. It defoliated very highly. That's what it does in verticillium fields. Gotta be careful on that variety. Here's another one. Cropland 9178 B3XF. That was nearly completely defoliated by the end of the season. A couple other new ones. This is Delta Pine 1835 B3XF, Delta Pine 1909XF, Delta Pine 1916 B3XF, Next Gen 3994 B3XF, Delta Pine 1908 B3XF, and Next Gen 3956 B3XF. I can't tell you what new varieties may be resistant, but I would be very cautious about planting those varieties in verticillium fields because they really defoliate it. They really defoliate it. In a year where there was almost no vert, they defoliated. Okay, we're going. This is our Floydata test, what it looked like on the 9th of October. So that's Fibromax 2334 GLT, which I use as sort of a resistant check. And that's Cropland 9178 B3XF. So it really defoliated. I don't know that it hurt the, yield that much because it was very late when it defoliated. But I would be very scared to put a variety like that in a verticillium wilt field. A couple other tests real quickly. This is one in ropes. Blue line is wilt, wilt incidence. The yellow line is defoliation. And if we look at some of the ones that spike, here's our Delta Pine 1612 again. This one here that's spiking, that's Delta Pine 1916, Next Gen 3930, Delta Pine 1851, Next Gen 3994, Delta Pine 1835. So again, I don't know what might do well of these new varieties in a verticillium field, but I would be nervous about those ones that really spike there. And I'm just going to go ahead and skip this last one because it's basically the same varieties we've seen elsewhere that are defoliating. So ones that I'll just list here, these are the ones that make me a little bit nervous right now. These are ones that make me a little bit nervous. We need to test them next year and hope and possibly in a better disease situation. So now I'm going to move on to some work that was done between 2014 and 2019. This is the Helms Farm at Halfway where we've got a research station. These are large plot. We've got some different cropping systems going on, crop rotations. We've got three different irrigation rates in this. We've got some two different tillage systems. So the tillage is where we have beds and conventional tillage, and we run LEPA hoses every other furrow versus a flat ground where there's very minimum tillage, and they use a splatter irrigation. So the water's kind of rolling wherever it will roll. And this has been in place since 2014, and I'm just going to share some numbers. Oh, and so large plots, I'm out there rating wilt disease stuff. Jim Brodowski runs this deal, and he's out there doing all the irrigation stuff and harvesting large plots. And so this isn't puny little stuff. This is some sizable plots. The fungus, this is it growing on a stem. It's forming little black spores on the stem. And so it has to be released from stems into the soil. So that soil inoculum is something I monitor, and it's something that's going to be impacted by different practices. So the first thing I want to talk about is crop rotation. So this circle first had verticillium wilt in 2007. We started this circle in 2001. It took 6 years to get our first verticillium wilt showing up. So I started to monitor things in 2008. So this is your lint yield on the y-axis, and I'm on this graph right here. I've got three irrigation rates here. This is your lint yield here, and we're looking at it for the first 3 years, 2008 through 2010. So your red line is your low irrigation. Your green line is your moderate irrigation, and your blue line is your high irrigation. The moderate rate, which we call one, that's trying to hit an 80% of the evapotranspiration that the plant's using. So the high rate in this scenario really was using quite a bit of water. Here on the x-axis, that's the frequency of growing cotton. So on this end, you're only growing cotton about 60% of the time. On this end, you're growing continuous cotton. Okay? And this is basically saying crop rotation had a big impact initially. Not so much on the low irrigation rate. There you can see just a modest decline in yield as you grew cotton more frequently. But early on in this field's history, as you grew cotton more, the yields just plummeted. So here you're up around an average of 1,200, 1,300 pounds of lint if you're growing cotton about 70% of the time. But as you go down here to 100% of growing cotton, you're down to 500 pounds of lint. So really, you're losing 700 pounds or more as a result of the frequency of growing cotton. This was in the early history of the field. Now we move sort of a few years later, 2012 to 2014. Still with your medium and high irrigation, the more frequently you grow cotton, the more you lose, the more yield that you lose. With the low irrigation, it didn't have any impact. But your yield losses are not quite as bad as they were in the early years. So now you're losing maybe 200 or 300 pounds, not 600 pounds. Now if we take it the last 2016 to 2018, it doesn't matter how frequently you've grown cotton in that field. It has no impact on the yield. There's other things. Obviously irrigation has impact on the yield. But the frequency of growing cotton is, it doesn't matter. So if your fields are new to verticillium, then there's value in crop rotation. Once you've had it for a while, don't worry about it, unless you're prepared to get out of cotton for a really long time. It just doesn't impact your disease. Now, going back to the 2014, in this case to 2018, in that Helms farm, we've got essentially three cropping systems. We've got a continuous cotton area, and that continuous cotton is on a little bit sandier ground, and it doesn't get quite as much wilt. So this is wilt incidence. So we're only averaging about 10% wilt incidence on that circle across your three irrigation rates. We have another part of that field that's in a sorghum cotton rotation, and that's actually got the worst wilt on the farm. It's closer to 20% on average. And then we've got a third cropping system that's in a wheat fallow cotton rotation, and that's averaging about 15%. And I'm just setting the table here. The cropping systems are not affecting the wilt anymore. It's the part of the field they're in that's affecting the wilt, because some parts of the field are a little wetter, have a little heavier soil. Water retains a little bit longer. Others are a little bit sandier. Now, if we look at irrigation rate over those 4 years, now we're looking at our base rate or our medium rate only hitting about 60% ET. So even the base rate is a little bit water stressed. You can see the amount of wilt dramatically increases with you as your irrigation rate increases. And so that hasn't changed over time. This last thing is on the tillage. Here's, you've got your beds and your conventional tillage versus flat ground minimum till. And you can see you get a little bit more wilt on your beds than you do on your flat ground. But not a huge difference, just a little bit more. But it's going to have a dramatic impact on yield. Now, this is your yield averaged from 2014 to 2018. Red is your low water, green is your medium water, blue is your high water. Okay, and these are some of your different cropping systems. Here's your continuous cotton that has less wilt pressure. Here's your sorghum cotton that has quite a bit of wilt pressure, and your wheat fallow cotton system that has pretty good wilt pressure. So if we look here, you can see that you're making just about the same yield in this system with your medium water and your high water. So you're adding essentially 50% more irrigation, but you're not gaining any yield. Now the solid is your beds. The stripes, that's your flat ground, okay? And you can see that your beds and your flat ground are yielding about the same. Here we go to this where the wilt's a little worse. Now your middle irrigation rate is making more lint than your high water. And in fact, your low water is making almost the same as where you're adding, you know, twice as much or three times as much water. And that's being driven in part by the disease, verticillium wilt. The more you irrigate it, the more you flare that disease. And in this case, you can see, at least in the moderate and the high water, you're yielding a little bit better where you're flat ground, not in beds, and where you're not really cultivating. We go to the wheat, fallow cotton part of that field. Now you're making more yields with your low water than your high yield, your high water. But your base is still about the highest yielding. Okay, now we're going to put some economics to it. We had a couple economists work on this data and figure out gross margins. So this is your cotton, continuous cotton part where the wilt's not that bad. Your middle irrigation rate is making by far the highest gross margins. And you're not a whole lot different between your beds versus your flat ground systems. But let's go over here to the sorghum cotton rotation where the wilt's the worst. Well, first of all, you're not making much money at all. And clearly, your base water is making the most, but the tillage system is really having the biggest impact. Your flat ground minimum till is making a ton more money than your beds and your cultivated ground. And so this is one of the points I wanted to really hammer in today. What a difference in gross margins when you went with the flat ground. And again, this is because the wilt's worse in that area, and for whatever reason, not doing the tillage and having flat ground made a whole lot more money than having the beds. And you can see your low irrigation rate made a whole lot more money than your high irrigation rate, though your base was the best. Now, if we go over here to the wheat fallow cotton system, it's even more glaring. In this case, you're making your most money by putting out the least amount of water. So as the wilt gets worse, the irrigation, you're wasting money by irrigating, basically. And again, the flat ground is doing a lot better than the beds. And so these are sort of the points that aren't real obvious. They're kind of subtle in the field. But when you start putting a pencil to the economics, oh my goodness, that's a big difference. I had been asked a little bit about cleaning equipment off, and so we've gotten to the point now where we carry a pressure washer essentially with us. It's got a tank hooked up to an engine, and we put a hose attachment to it there. And we've gotten to where we wash the dirt off our equipment whenever we're going into a field to plant or to harvest. There's some new diseases Cecilia's going to talk about, and there's starting to be, if you get one of these new diseases on your farm, it's going to be, ultimately, it's going to be devastating. And so I just want to make a plug. I know how ridiculously hard it is to wash your equipment from going from field to field, or wash your pickup truck off. I know, it's a joke, but we're coming to a time where there's some new diseases out there, and if you were to get them on your farm, you really would wish that you had done a little more washing. So with that, I want to thank our sponsors, Plains Cotton Improvement Program, Texas Cotton State Support, and then the producers who worked with us on our verticillium wilt trials, Ron Graves, Glenn Scher, and Larry Smith. So I'm going to turn this over to Cecilia now. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Cecilia Muklova, as Dr. Terry Wheeler introduced me. I'm the new Jason Woodward, if that helps you remember me. But I always say that I'm a little bit prettier than him. I'm kidding. I don't know him, so I don't know. Anyways, I'll be talking today about corn and cotton diseases, and I'll be brief, and there is a lot of information. So if you have any questions during my presentation, you can just ask it. I really want you to fully understand what I'm presenting about. And my presentation, the outline, first I'll be talking about corn. Although this information was provided by the plant pathologist at Amarillo Station, which his name is Ken Obaza. And we'll be talking about common diseases in corn and also some fungicide trials results that he conducted last year in 2019. Then we will move to talk about cotton, continuing Dr. Wheeler's train of thought. And we will talking about Fusarium wilt, the 2019 variety trials, the greenhouse studies, and 2019 pesticide trial, and a little bit about FOV4. So let's dive in. The most common corn disease observed in 2019 was a gray leaf spot, which is the upper one to your right. It is characterized by elongated, thin kind of necrotic lesions in the leaves, and because it is killing the cell, then the plant is not really going through photosynthesis. So it basically directly compromises the yield. The other ones that were observed last year was common rust, which I will show a picture in a bit. Smut, which is the second picture, that's a blackening of an enlarged size of the seed. And then northern corn leaf blight, which is the one in the bottom, which is more like oval and elongated, but more oval in terms of how it looks like. Hopefully this will help you to identify a little bit of the diseases. And one of the things that I want to point out is the fact that, or the importance of having a correct diagnosis. If you have any issues in your field and you don't know what it is very important to know what you have there so that we can create a plan to control it. If you have a bacteria, a fungicide won't work. If you have a nematode, a fungicide won't work either. So it's very important to know what you have out there. And for that, you can always go and talk to your IPM agents or county agents, and they get in contact with us. We can go and visit your field, collect samples, and give you a proper diagnosis, either us at Lubbock or Ken Obaza at Amarillo. So one of the ones that really draw Ken Obaza's attention was this kind of disease. I don't know if any of you saw this season, but it's kind of like a net kind of looking symptom. And it remained unknown, but it really draw the attention of the pathologist in Amarillo area. And this is how it looks like in the field. You have necrosis all around the leaf, which is expanding, and then it's really directly affecting the yield of your corn. So when he decided to make isolations and trying to identify what it was, he found Fusarium on it. However, he wasn't able to confirm that these symptoms were caused by Fusarium. That's what he got out of it. And of course, you know, Fusarium, how it affects the ears and creates toxins on it, which directly affect the quality of your corn. So this also was observed in Nebraska. And Nebraska, when they made isolations, they also found Fusarium on it. So this is kind of new in the corn world here. Another potential disease is tar spot. The picture on your right is common rust, and the picture on the left is tar spot. So how do you differentiate both of them? The one on the right, if you touch it, your finger will turn either brown or green or black in your finger. If you do it on the one on the left, you will have nothing in your finger. So the one on the left will be tar spot, and then if you get stain in your fingers, it will be rust. And then, okay. So, talking about tar spot, it was introduced in 2015 in Illinois and Indiana, and now it was reported here in 2019. It is favored by cool, wet weather conditions, and it can reduce the yield for about 60 bushels per acre. And it can also compromise the stalk integrity, making it more weak to get breakage. And some of the U.S. hybrids are actually susceptible to this disease too. And one of the fungicides that is listed for this disease is Trivapro by Syngenta. So here are some of the results that Ken Obaza did for the field experiments this year. Here we have, on your y-axis, the foliar gray leaf stop rating in terms of percent. So how much disease he saw in the field. And then in the y, in the x-axis, he has two different components, planting date and irrigation. So the first planting day was May 15, and the second planting date was June 19. And there were three irrigation levels, 50%, 75%, and 100%. So here you can see how the first, like having an early planting directly affected the amount of disease that was observed in the field, particularly in the 50% level of irrigation. That's the first huge part that you see here. And then in the rest of them, there was a significant reduction of the amount of disease observed. So let's talk about fungicides. This trial was using Syngenta fungicides. Here we have, once again, disease rating on your y-axis, and on your x-axis you have Miravis Neo, Stratego, and Trivipro, and the last one is non-treated. And you can see how, if you want to control foliar diseases, the use of fungicides could be a good tool for you, because there are significant differences between untreated, which is the last bar that you see, and the other three different fungicides treatments. So how does this look like in terms of yield? Here we have on the y-axis again the yield, and then on the x-axis the four different treatments. The first one is Miravis, the second Stratego, Trivipro, and the untreated. And the untreated had significant less amount of yield compared to the three different treatments. So moving on to the fungicide trial for Bayer. Once again, we have the percent of disease and the multiple fungicides. Here he used Dalaro, two different new products, Headline, Miravis, Trivipro, and Propulse, which Propulse also has a nematicide component to it. And the last one is the untreated control. Once again, there are multiple products that could be useful for you if you want to control foliar diseases, which foliar diseases are the diseases that happen in the leaf. And if you would take a look to the yields, all of the treatments based on the fungicide had a higher yield compared to the last one, which is the untreated one. So another fungicide trial was using Wilbur Ellis. Here it's a little bit different the way he presented it, and the first bar is the untreated control. And then you have Headline and three new products that are still in the development stage. And all of them, including Headline, were significantly better in terms of control of the disease. So they had least amount of disease in the field. And once again, we see the same trend in terms of yield. The first one is the non-treated control, and all of the other ones are the different treatments, including Headline and the three new products. And either treatment that you decide in terms of a foliar disease like this one, like tar spot, will give you a better yield compared to the untreated. However, between them, there were not significant differences. And finally, this was the fungicide trial with FMC using Lucento and TopGuard. The first bar, once again, is the untreated control, which had higher percent of disease in the field compared to the treatments. And if we take a closer look to the yields, the same trend. So once again, just to prove the point that fungicides controlling the foliar disease work. And this is a list of fungicides and labeled targets that you can take a look if you want to, can take a picture. So it is divided between the diseases that you might have in the field and how five different fungicides might work for them. So moving on to Fusarium, and this work was done in collaboration with Dr. Cherry Wheeler this past year. So Fusarium wilt is caused by a fungus, but it has a very tight interaction with root knot nematode. How many of you have root knot in your fields? Raise your hand. A couple. How many of you have Verticillium wilt? Okay. How about bacteria blight? A few. Good. Well, not good for you. Good for me. So Fusarium has three different aspects of the disease. The first one has a seedling disease. So that means that when the seed want to germinate, it infects it and directly compromises the germination, right? So that's the first picture that you see. You see very poor germination. You don't have any stands at all. Or if you have them, they're pretty small. So the plants that manage to survive that, they encounter nematodes and then Fusarium wilt in the vascular part of the disease. And the second one will be to see foliar symptoms. So here you can see the lower leaf, which is turning yellow and a little bit brown afterwards. That's Fusarium infecting the foliage. And then the third one will be to see the wilting. So once it infects the vascular tissue, because it's killing the vascular tissue, you're not getting water and nutrient movement. So you get less yield. So how does it work? Basically, the nematode breaks into the cell, and afterwards, Fusarium gets in. And they need the nematode in order to get in. So it's like someone basically like breaking down your door, and then anything can come in. That's what happens with root knot and Fusarium in this case, when you can see stunting, wilting, and then that yellowing the lower leaves. So how does it look like? This picture on your left, you can see the galling. This is a very highly compromised plant. And you can see on your far left some of the galls that the root knot produce in this plant particularly. And that black line that you see in the middle, that is the vascular tissue, basically dead. It was eaten up by Fusarium. And that's what happened. And then you get compromised your root system and also your vascular system. The next picture is how the fungus look in a petri dish. Basically, we cultivate it. And the other two are different kinds of spores that they produce. And I always like to talk about the one in the far right. That one that looks like a lollipop, I call it the lollipop spore. It's called the chlamydia spore, that's the real term. And I always like to mention it because this is the surviving overwintering structure of the fungus. So the fungus is able to stay in the soil, just basically getting ready for where you plant your next season, and then they can flourish and cause diseases. So we decided to do a field study evaluating multiple commercial varieties that are most of them available using the highest players in the market, right? So we had a NextGen, Stoneville, Phytogen, Delta Pine, Cropland Genetics, and Fibromax. So we had three different locations in Gaines County, Hall County, and also Lean County. And today I will be talking about the one in Hall County because it's closer to you. So over here you can see the yield pounds per acre in your X, in your Y axis, and then on your X you have the different cultivars. The one that has a star, that means that they carry a root knot nematode resistant the technology. Well, it could be partially or complete resistant with two genes or whatever they do with their technology. So here, the blue bar, that's the yield. The red line means the change in stand counts. So remember that I mentioned that Fusarium can cause seedling diseases and kill it in early stages. So whatever survived, that's what we counted, okay? And then the yellow one is the percent of nematodes relative to the highest, okay? So what I just want to draw your attention is how when you get higher amounts, so when your yellow bar is highest, you can also see how the red bar becomes higher too. So there's basically a direct relationship between the amount of nematodes that you have and the amount of stand loss that you get. So higher stand loss relates to higher population of nematodes, particularly if the variety that you're using is not carrying resistant technologies. Because if we see the number 5, which is Delta Pine 1820 B3XF, the yellow bar is very high. However, we can see how it is getting higher yields because it's carrying root knot technology. So, sorry, that one doesn't have. So the ones that carry root knot resistant technologies are Phytogen 500, Phytogen 580, Delta Pine 1747, Stoneville 4946, Phytogen 480, Fibromax 1621, Delta Pine 1823, and Phytogen 400. So this is a graph representing what I just told you. So the highest the amount of galling in the root system, the least amount of yield. So there is a direct negative relationship or correlation between the two of them. And this is a picture how it looks like. This picture was taken in the Gaines County trial that we had. And the one on the left is your tolerant or resistant variety. And the one on the right is your susceptible one. And you can see here, I love this picture because it's very visually representative of how it can impact. Oh, okay, good. Okay, so how it can damage. So in the greenhouse study, we decided to use Deltapine 1747 and Solvin 4946 just to see how it behaves in a controlled environment. And these are some of the results. So Stoneville 4946 and Deltapine 1747 had a lowest amount of root necrosis and stem necrosis compared to the susceptible check. So I will... Okay. So the pesticide trials we did at Turkey, and this was done by Terry Wheeler. Just wanted to show you very quick. Here we have no treatment, propols, and vellum total, and this is the plants per foot row because of the stem loss. And it was very particular how propols, which has a nematicide and also a fungicide together, had a lower yield, a lower plants per foot row compared to the untreated control. And here you can see the same in terms of yield. There were no significant differences between the three different treatments, including propols, vellum, and untreated control. And okay, so lastly, I just want to talk a little bit about FOV4. One of the diseases that Terry was mentioning is the possible or potential introduction of FOV4 to our area. It was reported in El Paso before, and it is the same Fusarium that I was talking to you about, but it is a new race. It's called race 4, and this one doesn't require root knot in order to cause infection. So it doesn't need the nematode to break in. It can do it on its own. And this one has 2,000 more genes than the regular one. So think about 2,000 more ways to get into your plant and cause infection. And here you can see some of the symptoms, that vascular necrosis. It is highly aggressive, and we haven't figured it out completely how to control it. But there is a huge team of scientists and county agents working on this. So if you suspect that you might have or you want to avoid the spread of FOV4, please do not share farm equipment with people that you suspect that have it. If you suspect it, please let us know. We will visit and we will run the test just to exclude it or confirm it. Also, wash your equipment, as Terry mentioned before, thoroughly with a biocide. It could be Lysol or Clorox bleach. And if you want to go in, use rubber boots and wash them very well with the biocide. And finally, please, please do not buy seed from El Paso area. If you're thinking about moving to Pima cotton, please try to find a different source of it, because this one can also be seedling transmitted. So, and also California has it, so no California and no El Paso. With that, I would like to acknowledge Rick Fustin for allowing us to run our experiments in his field. The funding source is Texas State Support Committee and the Plains Cotton Improvement Program. And finally, and this is the end, please stay connected. I am all over social media. You can add me, you can follow me, and also start a conversation with me. If you have any questions, I am more open to talk to you. You can also give me a call and find me. You have basically 6 different ways to get in contact with me, so I won't be able to run away. Also, please remember that Keno Baza is in Amarillo if you need any kind of diagnosis run. He also has a mycotoxin testing services now, and there are some handouts in the back if you want to see the different services that he provides and includes a cost of them. And also, as Terry said, we have our variety trials in the back, which also include the fiber quality of all of the varieties that we run. So there is a VERD, bacteria blight, fusarium, and nematode trials in the back. If you want to take a closer look, please feel free to go and grab some. With that, thank you.